So I'm going to, you have your little handheld devices, you can look up Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 5. And just a little background. Chapter 26 follows Chapter 25. And Chapter 25 is a description of glories of devotional service. Glories of devotional service is a description of how bhakti takes the living entity, in this case it's Devahuti appealing to her son, Kapila Dev, how to go beyond affinity for matter, attachment for worldly things, and in her case, the specifics are that Kartava Muni, her husband, to whom she has been married for tens of thousands of years, because it's Satya Yuga, that's a long time to be with somebody, and really easy to get attached. I mean, in a minute, what to speak of tens of thousands of years. And he's gone. He went back to the forest to engage in Yuga Dharma, meditation upon Vishnu. So she's feeling bereft of his association, recognizes those feelings are due to her attachment to material circumstances, which, of course, always change. You're not going to be forever small. One day you'll become like him. And one day he'll become like him, and become like him, become like me. So, change is always there. One thing that's constant in material existence is there's always change. So if you become attached to a particular circumstance, you're going to be despondent when it changes. So how to go beyond that, she wants to know from Kapila Dev. He gives a very simple formula: by becoming attached to that which doesn't change. And then even things may change. You're detached, and each new circumstance you fully engage in this case devotional service to Krishna. In this circumstance, that circumstance, because the thing that's unchanging is the service to Krishna position. So he explained bhakti is the way to overcome that attachment. And how does bhakti take place? It takes place by sadhu sangha, association with those who are attached to sat. Is sadhu. So, and the topmost of all of those attached to sat are those who attach to the personal feature of the Supreme. So he discusses the glories of this devotional service, what it is, how it happens, how it grows, what it looks like when it grows. The chapter ended with a description of disinterest in liberation. Many reasons why he's already liberated. But he's not chasing after something he already has. Because the Supreme, to whom he's attached, is in the liberated position. So he doesn't have to chase for liberation, nor happiness in this world or the next. Meaning, you know, heaven, the next, hopefully, instead of the bad place. So... And these are all accomplished by bhakti. Even one verse I like very much, it's even a half a verse. Instead of like, you know, the whole, you know, four lines, it's just two lines. He says this process of bhakti dissolves the subtle body, like the fire of digestion allows for food that you eat to be assimilated within the body. No longer the food, it's now the body, it's by the fire of digestion. So similarly, again, the subtle body. So that means material mind, you know, that thing that beats us up all the time, and false ego, the thing that tells us we're really important when in fact we're insignificant, and material intelligence that helps us figure out how to fulfill desires, only doesn't work, but we keep trying because we have material intelligence and we're proud of our material intelligence. So all of this gets dissolved, leaving material mind, spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, and spiritual sense of self. So the bhakti process itself does all those things, glories of devotional service. So that's a little summary of the previous chapter. And then chapter 26 begins with describing further glories of the object of devotional service. So there are these terms that you may know from Nectar of Devotion, that if you've studied Nectar of Devotion, there's Ashraya and Vishaya. A little vocabulary lesson this morning. Ashraya means shelter, and Vishaya means enjoyer, the object of enjoyment. So in love, there's three things: the abode of love, the object of love, and the transmission of those feelings of love. As bhakti is, you know, the devotee, the Lord, and the exchange of love between the two. It's all of those three parts. And the elaboration on that is found in Nectar Devotion, the science of relationship. But to have a proper relationship, you have to have proper knowledge of the relationship, sambandhagyan. In order to act properly in a relationship, you have to know what's what. If you have a wrong understanding of what's what, it's hard to have a relationship. True in the material world and true in spiritual reality also. So, chapter 26, Kapila Dev says, "My dear mother, now I shall describe unto you the different categories of the absolute truth." Like the object, Vishaya. So where the devotee is Ashraya, the one who is carrying love within them towards the Vishaya, the object. Subject, object, and then the exchange, called rasa or bhakti. Bhakti rasa. So he's announcing the object is now going to be described in different categories. You know, in like, you know, the poetic saying, "How much do I love thee? Let me count the ways." Or as Prabhupada would say, "God is good. God is great, and therefore I should love him. But how great he is, that they do not know." And the more one can understand the greatness of and the details of the absolute truth, the more lovable, the more impetus for love is stimulated. I know more about the object, especially when the object is lovable. Unfortunately, when we try to impose our love on something flawed in this world, once we become acquainted with that flawed something, we become disappointed. Oh, it doesn't match my expectation of what that something was. I'm not sure I want to love that something anymore. And then we look for another something, endlessly. I forget how he worded it, but George Harrison, in his little introduction to Krishna book, said something like this: people have the desire to love, but they just need to, maybe Prabhupada somewhere else, needs to know where to repose that love, instead of something fallible and imperfect and limited, something infallible, perfect and unlimited. Ah, then the satisfaction of the tendency of the living entity to love and to be loved is fulfilled. It's a divine dispensation to find that. And so he's going to disclose to his mother, Devahuti, and that means also to us, different categories of the Absolute Truth, knowing which any person can be released from the influence of the modes of material nature. So knowledge is liberating, and ignorance is bondage. A phrase that Prabhupada repeated many times is he would ask the question and then answer, what is the root cause of suffering? We don't like to suffer. It's called out. What's the root cause of suffering? Well, it's called out. That's the cause. No. According to the Vedic paradigm, the root cause of suffering is ignorance. And we're here because of ignorance, and therefore we're suffering because of the cold. So behind, you know, it's cold, is why are we even here? And why are we thinking this is misery and so on? And yet, if something else is happiness, well, it's just sensible, it's too cold, or maybe too hot. Anyway, you get the idea. It's what brings us here primordially or fundamentally. That's the root cause. That's an immediate cause, and then there's the root cause. How do we get here? And not just like global warming issues, and so that makes even winters more extreme and summers more extreme. But why do people abuse nature, and why are we here? Like, who are we, and why are we here? Those root cause is ignorance. And you hit the ignorance delete button, and there's no more suffering. The influence of the modes of material nature aren't acting anymore. So, bhakti eliminates ignorance, and knowledge of the Absolute stimulates bhakti. That's what is being said. So the first direction, Kapila starts to move in, is a something that we've heard many, many times, and because we've heard it many, many times, we may think, oh, I know all about that. And so we just like flip to the next one. What's something I haven't heard before? But these basic principles of Sambandha Gyan are repeated purposefully because we don't get it, even though we know it. It hasn't gone in, although it's, you know, we can say it back if we have to say it back. But it hasn't, we're still captured by the glare of Maya. Otherwise we wouldn't be suffering. So it's necessary to hear again. It's not like Devahuti was uneducated and didn't know these things, nor we as we read them, but it's important to hear again and very attentively, and gradually, by hearing again and again the subject matter, just like you might say to your children something again and again until they get it. Maybe, you know, they don't get it because they don't want to get it, or something. You know, their paradigm is our paradigm is such that we kind of get it, but we don't really get it. And then there's the realization of that. Besides getting it, then acting upon it, then you get realization. Prabhupada teaches this in Bhagavad Gita. When you act, very simple, when you act in knowledge, it increases realization. So rather than giving examples, just say it again. When you act in knowledge, when you have proper sambandha again, and then you act accordingly, you act within your relationship with the source of all things, you get realization. The realization comes from the source of all things. It doesn't come from yourself. It comes from the illusion being removed. like the curtain being drawn back, and then you can see what's behind the curtain. But now we're just seeing the curtain, and we're thinking that's it. And even we don't see the curtain properly. We see it as an object to be enjoyed rather than the deluding potency of the Supreme Lord, behind which there's reality. We don't see it like that. So exactly that's what's being spoken of in this morning's verse, text 5. The verse just preceding it is text 4. And in text 4, Kapila is saying to Devahuti that the interaction between the Lord and Prakriti, material nature, is a lila, the lila of creation. So we normally think of lila as Damodar Lila, or Mother Jasoda binding Krishna, or Govardhan Lila, Krishna is lifting Govardhan Hill. And as Krishna is lifting Govardhan Hill, he's performing a pastime. Or Krishna's herding the cows with the cowherd boys in the forest of Vrindavan, etc. We think of Braja Lila, or Dwarka Lila, or Matra Lila. But we don't so much think of material creation as a lila. But here, Kapila Dev is explicitly describing, labeling or characterizing the process of the Lord's interaction with Prakriti, material nature, as lila. So it's helping us understand the relationship. He says, as his pastime, that Supreme Personality Godhead, the greatest of the great, accepted the subtle material energy, prakritim sukshman. Sukshma means subtle, and prakriti is material nature. So the prakriti sukshman is pradan. You're in kirtan, huh? His left knee is one side of the mridangam, his right knee is the other side of the mridangam. This isn't interesting, but kirtan is interesting. So, sukshman means subtle. So the pradan is, that's what the totality of all material elements that are undifferentiated. That's Prakriti Sukshman. And then there's something that happens between the Lord and that Prakriti Sukshman. It's his energy. Well, and even more explicitly, it's a reflection of his internal potency. Mahavishnu has internal potency, just as Narayana has internal potency, Lakshmi. Or Krishna has internal potency, Radha. Or Ram has internal potency, Sita. So his internal potency is Rama. And mainly when we see depictions of Mahavishnu, we don't see Rama. Think about it. He's lying on the causal ocean, reclining on Anantashesh, with his forearms and symbols of Vishnu. But we don't see Rama. And the reason is, sometimes the Lord exhibits pastimes where she's external and sometimes internal, and that internal, where she's internal, it's his energy this way or that way, it's called Yoga Nidra. Yoga Nidra. Nidra means sleep. But his Yoga Nidra isn't like ours. His Nidra is not what we do. We're like, he's fully conscious, enjoying eternal pastimes with Rama within. Pastimes. Eternal pastimes. And then, besides Rama, there's a reflection of Rama called Chaya, shadow. Or another term is pradhan, and there's other terms giving details of different aspects of that prakriti sukshman. So this is describing sambandha, the relationship between the Supreme Lord and one of his different aspects, this prakriti sukshman. It says, that supreme personality of Godhead as his pastime accepted the subtle material energy which is invested with the three modes of nature and which is related with Vishnu. It's related in the sense of it's a reflection of his internal potency. So in that way it's related. So this morning's verse, text 5, divided into varieties by her threefold modes, material nature creates forms of the living entities. And the living entities, seeing this, are illusioned by the knowledge-covering feature of the illusory energy. So now it's like drilling down a little bit. There's this energy. Of course, there's many steps that aren't elucidated, but there's a glance by Mahavishnu upon that prakriti sukshman. And then there's contemplations within him as he's glancing. And just quickly, in the earlier in the third canto, chapter 5, it describes what he contemplates. He contemplates two things. That Chaya Devi, she wants to have some service, but she doesn't have any service. So I'd like her to have some service that's suitable to her. Compassion. That's one. Then another contemplation, it's just a thought, but that's all he needs to do, just have a thought. And then the energies of the Lord fulfill his thoughts or his desires. So another thought is the living entities that are in a state of susupti or deep sleep or not manifest state of consciousness, I wish for them compassionately that the fullness of their capacity for happiness be experienced by them. But in their present condition, that's not the case. Two desires, compassion and compassion, and Rama Devi, being his internal potency, she knows exactly the desire without him having even to say anything. He just has a thought or desire. So she assists him to fulfill that desire. And that is, she, one of her sub-potencies is the time energy, and the time energy, along with the living entities that are within the body of Mahavishnu, are transferred by her to the glance of Mahavishnu as he's glancing upon material nature. And then another aspect of the Supreme Lord called Shambhu, she entrusts both time and the living entities to Shambhu, who carries the glance to the pradhan, and then things start to differentiate out. It becomes agitated by contact with time and the living entities, and then the undifferentiated starts to differentiate. The elements of material creation start to differentiate out. So that's now the elements differentiating out, but specifically what's described here is the knowledge-covering potency, which is another aspect of prakriti sukshman. The modes of nature are there, but they're dormant because time isn't there. When time comes, they become activated. The elements are undifferentiated, they differentiate out. The living entities aren't there, so there's no bewilderment. But then when they're transferred to that prakriti, the bewildering feature starts to act again. What's that bewildering feature? That's what the verse is about. Jnana guhaya. We know from Ramayana, guha. Yes? And what does guha mean? Covered. So here's the purport, Srila Prabhupada's writing. Oh, here's the verse. Divided into varieties by her threefold modes, material nature creates the forms of living entities, and the living entities, seeing this, are illusioned by the knowledge-covering feature of the illusory energy. Purport. Material energy has the power to cover knowledge. But this covering cannot be applied to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'll say it first, and then we'll read it. There's two paragraphs, long paragraphs in the purport, and the main message is Maya deludes the tiny jiva. That same Maya cannot delude the Supreme. That's the main message. It's like, so it's understanding a glory or a feature, an aspect of Vibhu, the Supreme. The Supreme, the reference is made without citing the verse to the Bhagavad Gita 9:27, I believe it is, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. The Maya is under the Adyaksha, or supervision, of Krishna. And that because it's under his supervision, he's not influenced by it. It works according to his indication. So the living entities are under the influence of, but he's not under the influence of. That's the main message of the purport. Because it's really easy to think, well, Krishna's like us. I mean, We're under that influence, so he must be under that influence too. When he appears and performs his pastimes, he's a good version of one of us. Something like that. But that's a mistake. Before describing the Leela, we're getting Sambandha. Material energy has the power to cover knowledge, but this covering cannot be applied to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is applicable only to the praja, or those who are born with material bodies, the conditioned souls. The different kinds of living entities vary according to the modes of material nature, as explained in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literature. Oh, here it is, 7:12 Bhagavad Gita. It is very nicely explained that although the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance are born under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is not subject to them. Same message. In other words, the energy emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot act on him, semicolon, it acts on the conditioned souls who are covered by the material energy. The Lord is the father of all living entities because he impregnates the material energy with the conditioned souls. Therefore, the conditioned souls get bodies created by the material energy, whereas the father of the living entities is aloof from the three modes. Paragraph. It is stated in the previous verse, so I summarize that, that the material energy was accepted by the Supreme Personality Godhead in order that he might exhibit pastimes for the living entities who wanted to enjoy or lord it over the material energy. The world was created through the material energy of the Lord for the so-called enjoyment of such living entities. Why this material world was created for the sufferings of conditioned souls is a very intricate question. People ask it all the time, in different ways. But basically, it's a doubt question. No, God is all good. I accept that. God is all powerful. That means he can do whatever he wants. He's all good. He can do whatever he wants. So why did he create a place where people suffer? It's a puzzle. You've heard it, or maybe thought it. During the Rath Yatra in Chicago, I was introduced to a new congregation member, a very nice Chinese lady. And, you know, she introduction, and this is her name, and, you know, I've been coming to Regular Temple. I just have one question. And, yes, what's that? Why creation? Just like very succinct. So Prabhupada is saying it's a very intricate question. And he's now going to unpack a little bit that intricate question. But it goes back to these twofold purposes. Giving the living entities an opportunity to fulfill their ultimate desire, their complete form of happiness. That's a purpose. Unfortunately, most living entities misuse the purpose. It's like, you know, distribute $1 million to every citizen in the United States, and how many people are going to use it properly? Some people will use it for, you know, harm and for good, and hardly will the people use it for transcendence. But that the purpose is transcendence. The ultimate form of happiness is the happiness of transcendence. That's the purpose. So there's reformatory measures to help living entities get that acknowledgement and that mission of their existence. And to, in other words, use the creation properly. Use the facilities put in their hand in a proper way. So, it's a very good question. There's a hint in the previous verse in the word lilaya, which means, quote, for the pastimes of the Lord. The Lord wants to rectify the enjoying temperament of the conditioned souls. That's a purpose. The Lord, it is stated in Bhagavad Gita that no one is the enjoyer, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This material energy is created, therefore, for anyone who pretends to enjoy. An example can be cited here, that there is no necessity for the government's creation of a separate police department. No necessity. It's not like, hey, let's have a city, and one of the first things we want to do is get a police force so we can go grab people. But it's necessary. A prison is necessary because when you have people, in this material world at least, they're going to deliberately disobey. And so you need a place for them. So they can't go and harm others who are law-abiding. So they, rather than putting them out of existence, there's a place for them. There's a prison. And there's people that put them in prison. There's police. Etc. Etc. That's not the desire of the government. Oh, let's have a police force. It's necessary. Because it is a fact that some of the citizens will not accept the state laws, a department to deal with criminals is necessary. There is no necessity, but at the same time, there is a necessity. Similarly, there was no necessity to create this material world for the sufferings of the conditioned souls, but at the same time, there are certain living entities known as Nitya Badha who are eternally conditioned. We say that they have been conditioned from time immemorial because no one can trace out when the living entity, the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, became rebellious against the supremacy of the Lord. Paragraph. We're nearly done. It is a fact that there are two classes of men, those who are obedient to the laws of the Supreme Lord and those who are atheists or agnostics, who do not accept the existence of God and who want to create their own laws. They want to establish that everyone can create his own laws or his own religious faith. path. Without tracing out the beginning of the existence of these two classes, we can take it for granted that some of the living entities revolted against the laws of the Lord. Such living entities are called conditioned souls, for they are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. Therefore, the word gunair, vichitra, are used here. He's going to go again into the, but the Lord isn't conditioned while the living entities are conditioned. The living entities are conditioned because we're very tiny. The Lord is not conditioned because he's unlimitedly great. And moreover, those energies, the material energy is under his direction. This distinction is coming up. In the material world, there are 8,400,000 species of life as spirit souls. They are all transcendental to this material world. Why then do they exhibit themselves in different stages of life? The answer is given here. They're under the spell of the modes of material nature. Because they were created, the bodies were created by material nature, their bodies are made of material elements covered by the material body. The spiritual entity, spiritual identity, is lost. And therefore the word mumuhe is used here, indicating that they've forgotten their own spiritual identity. This forgetfulness of spiritual identity is present in the jivas, or souls, who are conditioned, being subject to be covered by the material energy, the energy of material nature. Jnana guhaya is another word used. Guha means, quote, covering. Because the knowledge of the minute conditioned souls is covered, they are exhibited in so many species of life. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th chapter, 1st canto. Can you get that? The living entities are illusioned by the material energy. Yaya samohito jiva. Describe that in just a minute. In the Vedas, it is also stated that the eternal living entities are covered by different modes, and they are called tree-colored, red, white, and blue living entities. Red represents the mode of passion, white represents the mode of goodness, blue represents the mode of ignorance. These modes of material nature belong to the material energy. And therefore the living entities under these different modes of material nature have different kinds of material bodies. But they are forgetful of their spiritual identities. They think the material bodies to be themselves. To the conditioned soul, me means my material body. This is called moha, or bewilderment. Last paragraph, just three sentences. It is repeatedly said in the Katha Upanishad that the Supreme Personality Godhead is never affected by the influence of material nature. It is rather the conditioned souls, or the minute infinitesimal parts and parcels of the Supreme, who are affected by the influence of material nature and who appear in different bodies under the material modes. The title of the chapter is Understanding Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Remembering that material nature is one of the aspects of, or components of, the Absolute Truth. Those of you that have studied Bhagavad Gita, you know from the introduction of Bhagavad Gita that there are five subject matters of Bhagavad Gita. Bhavadev Vidyabhusan has used that lens to look at Bhagavad Gita. And material nature and Ishvara, or God, and Jiva, living entities, are three of them. And then there's karma and there's time, the other two. And understanding these five, you can understand Bhagavad Gita. and the message of Bhagavad Gita. So this is helping us understand them. These here are specifically three. The Prakriti, Ishvara, and the Jiva. And Prakriti has this jnana guhaya feature. It covers knowledge. There's a potency. I mean, look pretty innocent. It's just there's a bookshelf, and here's a couch, and there's a floor and a table. And it's neutral. But there's a potency that we may or may not be aware of, and there's a knowledge covering capacity. Of course, whether it acts that way or not, has the big difference is how the living entity regards the Supreme Lord. And when you regard the Supreme Lord properly, that knowledge covering potency is withdrawn. Yay! That's liberation. But its liberation depends on how you regard the Absolute Truth. So this is helping us regard the Absolute Truth in a proper way. It's, you know, helping us understand how the whole machinery works, which we're just a little part of this big thing, creation, that comes from the Supreme Lord. So, in because of this nice reference of Canto 1, Chapter 7, I'll just describe it a little bit. It's such an important section of Srimad Bhagavatam that in his commentary, the Sandarbhas, of a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami dives deeply into it about three or four or five times, several times, because it's so important. It's so important because it's the essence of, or the basis of, the Srimad Bhagavatam's composition. And here's the background. In chapter 4 of Canto 1, there's a description of Vyasadeva being Trikala Gya, seeing past, present, and future. He looked into the future. It was towards the end of Dwarpa Yuga, just before the beginning of Kali Yuga. And when he looked forward in time, it was, yikes, look at that. Horrible. Let me do something for those living entities that will be experiencing Kali Yuga. And one of the things they'll be experiencing is a short memory. And so I'll write the Vedas, because his gift was as a literary incarnation. So he used his literary power to take the Vedas, which people wouldn't remember in Kali Yuga, and put it in a written form. So he did that. That's a lot. That's a big project. All the Vedas. And after completing that, he contemplated, how did it come out? And he felt something's not right. And he wasn't understanding why or what that feeling was. Narada appeared and shortening everything, instructed him, you have too much, you have given emphasis to religious rituals by which one can become piously elevated and thus become enjoyers of the facilities in this life and in the next. While it's all true, what you presented, it's not sufficient description of the personality of Godhead, which is the purpose behind all of that. So the solution then, my dear disciple Vyas, is that you should compile one such literature that just does that. But to prepare yourself for writing such a literature, sit in perfect trance upon the personality of Godhead, and what you see and experience and realize, that should be the basis of that literature. So he does what Narada says. And he fixes his mind in trance upon the personality of God, and he has this vision, which is what this verse is referring to. And I'll just read two of the verses. There's several, there's four primary verses. It's, if you want to look it up later, or 1:7, 4-7. And in verse 4, it reads, Bhakti yogena manasi samyak praniyate amale. Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism, and thus he saw, he had a vision. Exactly as Narada said would happen, it happened. What did he see? He saw the absolute personality of Godhead along with his external energy, which was under full control. Mayam cha tadapashrayam. Under his full control. So Maya, this is now back to Kapila, Maya is under the control of the Supreme Lord. Not the Supreme Lord is controlled by Maya. No way. It's his energy. His energy works according to his indication. And specifically in the commentary by our acharyas, we don't see that normally because Maya is standing in front. So the Lord is behind. We just see Maya. But if the Lord says, my dear energy, Maya, stand behind me now. Here comes my devotee. So when he says, Maya, step back, under his full control, she steps back. And what he saw was Maya behind the Lord, ready to do his bidding. But his bidding in this case was step aside so that my devotee can see me. Vyas. And then he had some realization about the relationship between the living entity and Maya. And that's Yaya Samohi. That's the reference in this purport. Yaya sa mohita jiva. Moha means bewilderment, and sam mohita means complete bewilderment. Yaya, by whom? So it's under the Lord's direction that the living entity becomes bewildered when their attitude towards him is adversity. Or rebelliousness, or, you know, like the criminal in the purport to read. The one that looks at the laws of the state says, oh, I don't care for your laws. To heck with your laws. I'm lawless. Oh? And then so the police force comes. So Maya comes. Yaya samohito jiva. Atmanam trigunatmakam. Although the living entity is beyond material nature, they become bewildered to think, I am material nature, I am this body. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product, and thus undergoes the reaction of material miseries. I mean, this is a fundamental dimension of the whole message of Bhagavatam, because it's a fundamental message of, in order to understand Krishna properly, you know, what Vyasadeva had not yet compiled, which Narada told him to compile, literature that specifically describes Krishna. We're not going to see Krishna, realize Krishna, if we're under this sammohita position. So we have to have a proper understanding, sambandh again. Like, what's stuff? in its relationship with its source of emanation. Have to. If you want to get release from bewilderment, the unwanted part of our existence. Misery and suffering and illusion and ignorance, the root cause of suffering. So remember, there's this jnana guhaya, the knowledge covering potency of material nature, and how to go beyond the knowledge covering potency is by the linking process of bhakti. Bhakti yogena manasi, samyak praniyate male. So then the next verse, text 6, the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this. And therefore, the learned Vyas compiled this Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is in relation with the Supreme Truth. So that's a verse upon which this one is expanding the meaning. In fact, there's a whole chapter expanding that meaning. In detail, it's sometimes hard to like keep track of all the detail. But so it's scientific. There's a technology to it all. Spiritual technology. And just to conclude, one of the essential features of properly applying this spiritual technology is getting really clear what the relationship is between Prakriti and the living entity, and Prakriti and the master of Prakriti. Sambandhagyan. In order to do the linking process with the Supreme properly. And with impetus or inspiration to love him and to serve him in all the things that we do, rather than the material one, where in the absence of him we're engaged in our fruitive activities in ignorance or forgetfulness of him and our relationship with him. He's like obscured. So we're trying to, that's a disease, we're trying to cure the disease. Kapila Dev is helping. And remember that, that all of this is in response to a question by Devahuti saying, help, I'm overwhelmed by my affinity for matter. And I know that it's illusory, but what can I do? I have this affinity. I know that that's your energy, you can withdraw it. As you've covered me by it, please withdraw it. So he's giving her the means to withdraw it, as he's giving it to us. Equal opportunity message. Okay, so any discussion? Boys, you did pretty well. I know it's boring, but you did all right. Thank you. Sitting there peacefully. Yes?
Thanks for wonderful class about that canto, and you briefed very well the whole chapter, what it is. So my question is, Maharaj, that you mentioned that the Prakriti is created and Jiva is always diluted, and the Paramatma, the Bhagavan, is in aloof, basically he's not diluted. So my question is what I heard from in previous classes is for a devotee who surrendered to Krishna, the Maya is not affected. That's one. And I would like to get the difference between that and for a liberated soul, is Maya is affected or not?
Well, three things in what you said I have questions about. The frame of your question was, part of it was, Prakriti is created. And so Prakriti is never created. Maybe it was not what you intended, but it's what you said.
Yeah.
Prakriti is not created. As Krishna is eternal, as a living entity is co-eternal, Prakriti is co-eternal. there's different stages or states of matter, but Prakriti is one of his eternal energies. Then you made another statement, which is that I can't recall exactly how you said it. Maybe you can re-say it. You know, the position of restate the last part of it, rather than the preamble. What's like the punchline of your question?
The punchline of my question is like jiva is affected by the material nature, but like
a conditioned living entity is affected by material nature.
But like Paramatma is not affected by the material nature.
Yes.
So in that case, my punchline is like as a devotee, Maya is not affected. Like
does what do you mean? Maya, what do you mean? Maya is not affected. Explain. What do you mean by that?
My understanding was like if you are a surrendered devotee, Maya will not affect you. That's one of my understandings.
Well, it depends on yes, but it depends on what you mean. So let me just clarify. It's cold out. So it's not that it's not cold out. You become a devotee and it won't be cold. Or you become a devotee and the body doesn't age and deteriorate.
That's right.
So material nature goes on doing its thing. You're a devotee, material nature goes on. But so not being affected, we're affected in the sense we can get disease and, you know, get cancer and, you know, all kinds of things that aren't what we would want. But we're because we have a material body, the influence of the deterioration effect of material energy and its, you know, the modes of nature are still acting. It's cold and it's hot and, you know, it's light and it's dark, and so we're affected in that sense. But not identifying with that is the life of a devotee. It's not my source of happiness and suffering. It goes on. And in service to Krishna, I'm wearing something warmer than I wear in the summer and so forth. I adjust in appropriate manner to the circumstances. If I get some illness, I do something. But it's not, oh, now I'm miserable. Or, you know, the body or the mind. Same. So there's a sense of detachment that comes with attachment to Krishna. That's how the devotee is not affected. But just qualifying the statement. Now.
And for the liberated souls also, it's the same condition, Maharaj?
For a liberated soul? Well, the devotee is the performance of devotional service begins from the liberated platform. There's two verses where Krishna states that very clearly. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakaṃsati samaksareshu bhuteshu mad-bhaktim labhate param is one. And 14:26 is another. Again, the Brahma-bhuta phrase is used. So devotional service, message here is, devotional service is from the liberated platform. So when you say, in contrast, the devotee and the liberated soul, I'm having a problem differentiating.
My understanding, the liberated soul is like maybe a conditioned soul or like all this, like for example, Sankaracharya, like, you know, we call him as a Mayavadi. So my understanding was he's a liberated soul or like...
liberated, without naming a name, liberated means in touch with Brahman. The different features of Brahman. There's Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And those that are in touch with Brahman, whether Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan features, that's a liberated soul. And such a soul is detached from matter. Well, their body may also die and get disease or whatever else, cold and heat. But they're unaffected by, the liberated soul is unaffected by.
Right.
But the sustaining that position is another thing. Meaning, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, without having taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one cannot stay in that position. The ultimate happiness of the living entity has not been attained. That is the happiness of loving service, the constitutional position of the soul, has yet to be attained. So, Arurya Krishna Param Padam Tata. One has to come back to this position. So, for that, there, you know, I don't want to get into a long description about the difference between Brahmavadi and Mayavadi, but there's a difference. Brahmavadi is like the position of the four Kumaras or Shukadeva Goswami, for example, where they were absorbed in Brahman, not just philosophized, but they were absorbed in Brahman. And there, and in that position, one is indifferent to material circumstances, aloof from, unaffected by. And that's in that Brahman realized state, the answer to your question is yes. That kind of liberated soul, transcendentalist. But then there's others that it's a philosophized position without the actual contact with Brahman. Actual contact with Brahman is not established by neti-neti. What is Brahman? You know, by philosophy, by conjecture, or by strong logic. Not this, not this, not this, not this. What's Brahman is not this. That's the philosophized sense of what Brahman is. Then there's the positive sense of contacting Brahman, fully immersed. That's at least scripturally, that's the position of the four Kumaras and Shukadeva Goswami before they had contact with Bhakti. And the indication that that was their position is when they did contact Bhakti, they moved. Does that answer your question without drilling on a personality?
Yes, Maharaj, almost like a small doubt is like, so I understand that like we are affected materially, even though, but yet, like, you know, in a spiritual platform, like, and as you said, like, as long as we have attachment with Krishna, the happiness is not affected, but materially the body is affected.
Yes.
So in that case, that like the spiritual soul, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that Maya is not affected in that area, how he is differentiated? Even he is not affected by bodily? Is that what
he has? No body. He has no material body. He doesn't have, like we do, a body covering the soul. He doesn't have a body covering, a material body covering him.
Okay.
So he's not affected. Not even at all. There's no aging. There's no headache. Although he has a pastime where he has a headache. There's no hunger, although he has a pastime where he's hungry. It's all pastime, because there's no material body covering the soul. There's no such thing for him. For us, there is. So we're afflicted, or tolerant, or transcendental, like we just rise above it. But for him, it doesn't exist. Although he has pastimes where it appears. And that's a nice subject matter. Vibhrama vilas. Seeming error. Described in Brahma Samhita by purport by Bhaktisiddhanta. Very nice message. Anything else? Brother London, you always have something. Yeah.
When you're talking about attachment for Krishna and detachment from material nature, I was thinking about Bharat Maharaj's pastime. where he like renounced the entire earth planet. He was the ruler of the earth planet, and he wanted to devote his rest of his life in devotional service. But at the same time, he rescued a baby deer and started developing affection and attachment.
Yeah.
So, when he was engaged in devotional service, how was that possible? The point of my question is, devotees by nature are compassionate to other living entities.
Yeah.
But at the same time, how to draw the line so that I don't cross the line where I become so affectionate and attached, rather than just extending care?
Well, something that may help is that the last part of what your question is well, that'll be answered. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami articulates stages of bhakti and the superlative developed stage. And the lowest of them is Jnana Bhakti, and Bharat Maharaj is identified as a Jnana Bhakta. And then Shuddha is Ambarish Maharaj. So he's a resident of Vaikuntha, even on earth, because of his Vaikuntha consciousness. So Bharat Maharaj wasn't there yet. He was still with some mix of Gyan. So that mix of Gyan was disturbable, and it became disturbed. But the Lord recognized the bhakti beyond, in addition to the mix of Gyan, and gave him special dispensation and arranged for him to go back to Godhead after a little, detour. So, for us, we're also mixed. We're not at the Shuddha stage. So there is a chance. And one of to address your question, we should be cautious, vigilant, knowing that although that, something, the possibility is there of being distracted. I mean, just pick up your bead bag and start chanting and see what happens. And we're distracted. So it's not only the possibility is there, it's there. We're distracted. So never become complacent. That's the advice. Stay, Shikshastakam 3, and just live by that. That's what to do. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, I want to hear more about Sambandha Jnana, because that has been emphasized so much everywhere. And so the essence of Sambandha Jnana, isn't it that to understand and live by that Supreme Lord is Vipu and I'm very tiny, insignificant?
That's the essence, and then there's detail. There's the living entity and the Supreme, and then there's everything else. That also has its relationship with the Supreme. And to see everything else properly, meaning in relation to the Supreme. So now we're getting like a breakdown of some aspects of that everything else, and in relation to the Supreme.
So it's ever-expanding, like...
Yes. There's a seed, yes. There's a seed, and from the seed comes the tree. So that there's the principle that says, my real identity is I'm part of the tiny, fragmental part of the Supreme. I'm not this body. I have proper knowledge, transcendental knowledge of my identity as Brahman, aham brahmasmi. But that's, okay, that's true. And then there's prakriti, and there's time, and there's karma, or activity. How to properly see those things. It's all part of Sambandha Jnana. Something that may help you in addressing your question is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his description of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, identifies them as 10 in number. The term that he uses is Dasa Mula. You've heard that. So, out of the 10, there's one that's Pramana, and the other 9 are Prameya. Pramana is the evidence, scripture is that Pramana, and the other 9 is what the scriptures teach. Okay? And then Sambandha is 7 of those 9. It's not just the living entity is spirit. There's 6 other ones. So, Sambandha Gyan is all of those things, which is the basis for devotional service. The basis is important. How can you walk across the floor unless there's a floor? I may want to go upstairs, but there has to be a floor. You get upstairs. So the foundation of the elevating principle of bhakti is those different principles. And to thoroughly understand those principles provides a spiritual conception for engaging in devotional service. Because if I don't have a spiritual conception, like Raghunandan's question, I may be going along with a good sentiment of devotion to Krishna is good. I'm small, he's great. I'm doing devotional service. But I don't... if I don't have a proper, complete spiritual conception, I may, you know, go off the middle of the road and fall in the ditch. And, you know, forget that I'm Krishna's servant and do something stupid. So, Sambandha Gyan, it's not a guarantee, but it's that one will become elevated, but it's a necessary prerequisite to be safe and sure. The spiritual conception upon which bhakti is carried out. Does that help?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm looking over here. Any on the lady's side, anything? Yes? Yes?
Hare Krishna, I speak of more distances. I have a conceptual question, Maharaj. My understanding is that once you go back to God, you don't return back to the material world.
Okay.
So are there two classes of souls or spiritual living entities in the spiritual world, Maharaj, those that have fallen and gone back, and those that haven't and can fall?
I almost got a yes, but the way you ended up was not exactly. Here's from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, 10th canto, chapter 29, a verse where Krishna is calling the gopis to come and join his rasa dance when he calls them by playing his flute. Long commentary where he describes there are 4 different classifications, not just 2. Some are nitya siddha. Some are sadhana siddhas. Now, there's 2 others, categories, but just taking those 2, nitya siddhas and sadhana siddhas, in both cases, the nitya siddha and the sadhana siddha are those that are, some are direct expansions of Radharani, and so they're not like us. They're shakti tattva, they're not jiva tattva. But those who are jivas, even in the liberated position, whether they're nitya or sadhana, living entities in the spiritual realm, they're marginal means marginal. Tiny means marginal. So the potential of falling is there because they're marginal. The difference of whether there's falling or not falling is where attention is turned, where the faculty of consciousness goes. And when the faculty of consciousness goes to Krishna, there's no falling. But if I turn my consciousness or attention away from Krishna, the potential is there because we're marginal. The example given in the Vedas is of what marginal means is where a river meets the riverbank. There's the river, and there's the riverbank, and there's the line where the river meets the riverbank. So can you say that line is river or is bank? Was marginal. In between this and that. So living entities are marginal. And which energy of the Supreme Lord we associate with or are under the influence of depends on where our attention towards Krishna is. And if it's away from Krishna, it's the deluding potency. And if it's towards Krishna, it's the internal potency. But it's one or the other, because we're marginal. It's one or the other. So in the spiritual world, there may be, in fact, there's, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's Kripa Siddha also. But in the spiritual realm, there's not a, you know, you're not wearing a sign that says, I'm a Nitya Siddha, and I'm a Kripa Siddha, and I'm a Sadhana Siddha. They're not, you know, camps or groups. Siddha is Siddha. And in that state of Siddha, regard for Krishna is, you know, is prevailing. But the book, Prabhupada has made it very clear, because we're jiva, the potential of misusing that and turning attention away from Krishna is there. Just such persons don't, and for good reason. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yes.
I think that, you know, there's some purification is happening, and Krishna is addressing some attachment within me, and I have to work on it. But there is also the tendency that, you know, taking shelter of Krishna in such a way that, you know, I know that the, you know, devotees never think of, like, you know, the situation has to be changed, but, you know, rather how can I serve in that situation. But there's a mentality of even if the situation gets better, then it is to serve Guru and Krishna nicely only, right? So why can't the situation still change?
Situations can change.
So I'm not able to address that kind of mentality.
Well, Prabhupada gave a nice way to address that, and that a prayer that says, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire. The application of it was, specifically, when Prabhupada became very ill, he gave us that prayer. He said you can have, you know, have kirtan in the temple, for, you know, when he became, like, serious states of illness, and 24-hour kirtan, and after Mangal Arti, you can say this prayer, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire. Please keep our spiritual master with us so we can go on receiving his guidance and direction and inspiration. So a desire for things to change, there's one example, may be appropriate in the mood of service. And that's one way to express in the mood of service. But ultimately we're dependent upon the desire of Krishna, the plan of Krishna. Okay? Hare Krishna.
I have a question about, like, based upon our consciousness, we get the realization of material or spiritual
and also realization also comes through the samana jnana. So to correlate all these, what are all the sources?
All the sources
of samana jnana we can.
All the sources. We'll start with Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a pretty good one. We'll take care of all the sources. I mean, the Vedas, that's referring back to this, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are 10 in number, and the first of them is Shabda Pramana. The Pramana, or means of knowing, is from scripture. And for us, the Srimad Bhagavatam is superlative scripture. The Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the teachings of our acharyas based on Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. For us, that's also illuminates Sambandha Gyana, the teachings found there. But exactly what were the verses that we read this morning and summarized, that's Sambandha Gyana. Right there. Just jump in, pull.
But based upon my consciousness, I may not understand the full.
Oh, then read it again. The purport is there, and then if you don't understand, you read it again. Just as I said that earlier, just like you may say to a child something, you know, eat your vegetables. Oh, I like the sweets. Well, it's important that you have a balanced diet along with the sweets, that's okay. But the vegetables are important too. And they may not understand that. But as they mature and so forth, and that should start to, oh, that's what my father meant when he said, eat your vegetables. Or whatever it is. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
In a lot of lectures, I heard Rama Devi and the shadow Chaya Devi.
Yeah.
But the question is, in all the pastimes of Krishna, why is that it so happened that I didn't hear, or why is that there is no mention of Rama Devi and Chaya as the other characters are mentioned? I do not know if I'm framing my question correct. I mean, the other energies of, as you said, like Radharani is the internal potency of Krishna. And so in the transcendental pastimes you have all other characters. But why is that there is never, or maybe I didn't hear the mention of Rama Devi is this, or this is how she did X, Y, and Z?
Well, it's not. It's there, but it may take a discerning eye or guidance from teacher or teachers to see that thread. And I can say, you know, from the study that I did of Sri Brahma Samhita, it's there, but there's some other parts of the thread that aren't elucidated because it's just 61 verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. And something in this chapter and something in that chapter, and so the method of presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam is not like an encyclopedia where there's a topic and then beneath the topic there's everything that you need to know about that topic, and then, you know, the end of that section, go to another topic. It's not composed that way. It's composed in a different way. So the closest thing to what you may be wishing is the commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam by Jiva Goswami, where it's topic by topic. But even then, you know, something over here and something over there, like I just described these four verses in the seventh chapter. It's not threadbare, it's only in one section, and everything you need to know is right there. Just open to that page or that section and you got everything about Rama Devi and Jaya Devi, for example, or whatever. because there's other dimensions and other dimensions, and you know, in relevant to other dimensions, there's other features that are more appropriate described over here than consolidating everything over here, because it's very intricate and involved. So the composition, I'm saying, of Srimad Bhagavatam is not like an encyclopedia. It's messages, and some are here and some are. So if one gets familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, then one can see the symmetry. And Brahma Samhita, specific to Rama Devi and Chaya Devi, it's just the way in which it's written, it's very explicit. It's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It's mentioned in two places, second canto, third canto, in the Bhagavatam. But not, so. Then another feature, this is a detail, but as I mentioned, Rama Devi is commonly within Mahavishnu. So we don't know so much about Rama Devi. There's not pastimes that are visible. It's just Mahavishnu is enjoying eternal pastimes within. We don't know, I don't know the details of those pastimes. It's not described. But whatever they are, there's pastimes. And so therefore it's called Yoga Nidra. That's one of her names. Yoga Nidra. Because within. But then sometimes she does things without knowing his desire. So as much as there is disclosure, then we can know. And again, now back to the first point. It's not that it's all in one place. That's not how the composition is done. There's something, then later something, then over there something. And then there's the commentaries of our acharyas who make reference to even other sources sometimes besides Srimad Bhagavatam, or references to the Shrutis where it's more obscure, but it's there if you have the acumen. Oh, there. It says it over here too. So the association with the commentary of our acharyas. Fortunately for us, Prabhupada has taken all of that and distilled it into his Bhaktivedanta purports. So that's our primary portal. That's our access to that understanding. But given the mission that Prabhupada had, which was introducing Bhagavad Dharma to the world that's devoid of culture, Vedic culture, spiritual culture, details and details are not necessarily what he presented. Essences and essences is what he presented. So you're looking for details, and he was giving essences, given the audience. The assignment given to him by his spiritual master. Present to the English-speaking world this message of Lord Chaitanya. So it had to be pablumized a little bit, because the power of digestion was not so good. The details might not be so prominent, because people get spun out by those details and miss the essence. So he gave the essence.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Looks like we're done. Anything else? Someone else? Okay. See the problem, Prabhupada. Jai. Jai.
Jai.